If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs, with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 81 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I am delighted to be joined by Amy Parker all the way from China. So we're going to hope the connection holds. We've got a slightly different Hirschsprungs story today, and I am fascinated to know the ins and outs of how this all came to be. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you.
Now, I know we were talking a little bit before about your daughter's Hirschsprungs. And as I said in the intro, it's not a textbook case, as you told me. Not that Hirschsprungs is a particularly textbook condition, but it's not a common one. And there's certainly some things in here that I haven't heard before. We'll start from wherever you'd like to start from.
From the beginning, I suppose.
Yeah.
So we had her diagnosis in April of last year. She was almost 14 months when we had her diagnosis, but it sort of started around 6.5 months ish. As she started solid foods, she became chronically constipated. Until then, she passed stool without any issues. So we just briefly spoke about the five things of more common in boys than girls, the low birth weight, sicky baby, irritable baby, and the constipation. She had none of those things except for the constipation after she started solids. So we started to notice that she wasn't drinking as much breast milk. She was only breastfed but pumped milk, so we could see how much she was actually. I'm very type A. I didn't want to breastfeed, but I wanted her to have breast milk, and I wanted to see how much milk she was having. I was very type A before she was even born. I decided that's what I was going to do. And some people are like, oh, my breastfeeding journey ended up in pumping. I was like, my breastfeeding journey is pumping. And that's that. I said, I don't know how much she's drinking. I need to know. So that was how I did it, right? So anyway, we started noticing she was refusing. Actually, no, a little bit before that. Now I think back. She was refusing bottles a bit around like 4 to 5 months. She was a bit irritable, not drinking as much, but that was always put down to teething. And that was that. But she would still drink enough, right? It might be that she wasn't following the same sort of pattern as she was the day before or something like that. But overall, she was still gaining weight. She wasn't losing any weight, so it wasn't an issue. Then when we started solids with her, obviously they don't really take much in the first couple of weeks, even month, 2 months. You know, they're just eating tiny, tiny bits here and there. But she loved porridge. So she would have a porridge. So she'd have her morning bottle and then she'd have her porridge a couple of hours later. And then she'd started to maybe not have the third bottle or maybe just drink 10, 15 mils. And then the same the rest of the day. And it was like, why is this child so full? So then we started giving her like a little bit less of the porridge, because obviously at that age, they don't need the food as much. And you know, they still concentrate more on the breast milk for the nutrients and whatnot. So anyway, around 6.5 months-ish, I noticed like her poo habits had changed. as you do when you're a first-time mum to a six-month-old, your life is around there pooing and peeing and drinking milk. And I had an app that I was also obsessed with. And actually, until she was 2 years of age, literally the day she was two, I put in every nappy, poo, pee, every milliliter of milk, every sleep and wake window, and every pump.
Wow.
So it was actually really good when it came to the diagnosis and following things, because I had a record of everything.
Yeah.
Right? But around 6.5 months, it was the August time. So yeah, she was 6 months, the 11th of August. It was towards the end of August. She hadn't gone for a week. Like a full week. And now she was a bit irritable. She was trying to push and it just, nothing was happening. Until a Sunday afternoon, I remember it vividly. She was waking up from a nap. We were ready to go out for lunch. We were going to meet some friends for lunch. And this baby just cried. Like she was screaming. And I was like, what's going on? What's going on? And then we're like, right, check, is she like trying to poo? Because it's been a week, right? So we had been told by a midwife friend of ours, like, put some Vaseline around her bum, you know, try and help it come out. So we tried to do that. And you could see, like, it was trying to come.
Hmm.
And we, like, took her nappy off. We were, like, moving her legs. So we tried bicycle a bit, rub her belly, tried to put her in the bath. And then this poo just came, like, whether she wanted it to or not. But it came with force. So you can imagine now what was the scene in that area, and we went straight to the hospital. I don't know. I didn't panic because I was more like, I know why she's crying. Like, if she'd still been crying and nothing had come out, I think I would have been a bit more panicky. Whereas I'm like, she's very sore because of what has just happened. This is why this baby's crying, right? So we got to the hospital Sunday afternoon. We're like, oh, is there going to be a peed on call? Because that's the way the system is there. We went to, it was a private hospital, but usually on a Sunday, you might not see a peed. You might see a GP, right? Whoever's on call at the time. Luckily, it was a pediatrician was on call as the GP that day type thing. So we saw him and he was like, look, let me see your notes, whatever. And I'm like, literally, there's no notes. This child has been fine since day dot. Like, she hasn't caused us any issues. She's been gaining weight the whole time. She's up to date with our vaccines. Like, there is no notes. The only notes are we've come to under five clinic, which is what it's called in Zambia. Okay. And he was like, oh, okay. Has she been constipated before? And I'm like, nope. And he's like, oh, okay, this is very, like, different. And I explained, no, we started solids. And he's, oh, okay, right. Very common thing. Babies need to adapt to the solid foods, and let's just give her some cream for the area that's sore right now. Give her some lactulose so that she can, you know, clear out what's been in there the last week. Come back in a few days so we can check on the wound area, because obviously the position of where she had a cut, they wanted to just check it was still clean and stuff, you know. So they gave us a suppository so that we could clear her out, and then also the lactulose. But unfortunately, the suppository they put in the hospital, she had pushed out, because you can't tell a baby not to push when it feels like it wants to push, right? Son, sit up, and oh, baby. So we then had to insert another suppository when we got home, when we realized, like, wait, this baby hasn't pooed, like, the suppository is supposed to make it. So we had to do that ourselves. And I feel like that was the start of the journey. Kept it on the lactulose, went back 5 days later, saw her pediatrician, and then he was like, let's just give it a month. Like, let's see if things are going to change. Let's see if it's a one-time episode. Let's see what happens. Keep her on the lactulose and do three times a day, and then we'll go from there. So three times a day on the lactulose, she was going. She went once a day or once every other day. And like, just as normal. That was it. So then we went back to the hospital. And he said, okay, let's lower the dose of the lactulose and see if that changes anything. So then we actually went on holiday. We went to Dubai. We met my parents in Dubai. We went for a week. My parents came for a long weekend. They had no idea of what had gone on at this point, because there was no reason to tell them, you know, no point to worry them. And then we had to give her the lactulose, obviously, when we were there. So I said, look, she's having this because she's had some, you know, a bit of problem pooping. And that's that. You know, at that time, we had no idea Hirsch twins even existed. And funnily enough, in Dubai, she was just going like there was no stopping her. So we were like, oh, maybe she did just need a little bit of lactulose. And she was eating more. She was drinking all of our bottles. She was even drinking a little bit of water. Like, she was great. We went back to Zambia. Went back for another appointment and we told him this. So he was like, okay, let's lower the dose. And then he said, look, also on you a prerogative now. He's like, we're going to give her another month. Let's not keep her on the lactose if she doesn't need it. Because you just told me she's had a week, 10 days of greatness. So let's put her down to twice a day. Then keep going. Put her down to once a day and stop if things are going the same. So we got down to the point of giving her a dose down to once a day and then nothing for like 3 days. And then she didn't go again for 10 days.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So it's like something is not happening. Went back again. This was now like 8.5 months old. And he was like, okay, let's put her back on the laxatives, put her back on the lactulose. Maybe it's something she'll grow out of. You know, there's a lot of things babies grow out of by the time they're one. He's like, I don't want to go into anything serious, anything invasive, if she's going to grow out of it. Because remember now she had none of the textbook symptoms.
Nah.
He actually threw the word Hirschsprungs out and said, we don't want to go into anything invasive like Hirschsprungs when she doesn't have any other symptoms.
Okay.
At the time, right? He is a Lebanese doctor.
Yeah.
And he said, let's just go back to where we were. Go back on the laxatives and go from there. Okay. So then we noticed she would always poo in the car seat. Whenever she was in the car, the moment we got in the car, she would go. Moment she was in the bath, she would go. But any other time, she wouldn't. Remember, she was still on the laxatives, though.
Yeah.
Right? So then the next time we went back, I told him this. And he was like, okay, let me examine that again. So then he was like, oh, actually, it looks like her anus is a bit anterior. Maybe there's something inside that is not quite lining up. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I definitely haven't studied wormholes in my life, so okay, I'm going to listen to you on that one. And he's like, but no, that's me looking really hard, you know? Like, it's not something you would have noticed, definitely not to an untrained eye. He's like, I'm clutching at straws because you're saying, no, these positional things are happening, right? We're thinking more about those things. He's like, let's just hold on till she's one. I'm like, okay. So we kept going. But at this point now, she's not gaining weight. She was 6.5 kgs at 6 months and she was 7.2 at one. Right? But she was drinking her milk, but everything was then coming out, right? You know, she wasn't thriving then, that failure to thrive word that they throw around. She wasn't. But she was happy as Larry. Like, she was fine. She was not irritable. You would not look at her and think, oh, she can't poo. You know, like, she's having trouble. She's a bit irritable. No. Like, not at all. And we always knew, like, if she'd had 2 or 3 days where she hadn't gone, even with taking the laxatives, like, oh, took her in the car for a drive, she'd be like, and she'd go. Right? It was madness. So I don't know if there was something to do with her positioning of her being able to get a bit of oomph behind it or what. I don't know, right? But that was what was happening. So he was really leaning more towards there was some sort of positional something, right? Then we got to the Christmas time. We went to the UK for Christmas and she just ate anything and everything and was drinking all our milk again. I'm like, does she just need to be on holiday? Like,
yeah,
feel relaxed and everything's okay. Like, we had to put the lactose dose down because she was going quite often and she didn't have diarrhea, but she was going more often. And I'm like, well, is it changing water? But then, like, we don't give her, it's bottled water she has in Zambia anyway. And she wasn't really drinking much water at that point because she was still on breast milk. She was only 10 months, not 10 and a half months. And, like, you know, I looked at my own diet. I was going. So my breast milk was fine. You know, it was all of those things. Let me eat a high fiber diet. Let me change this. Let me change that and then see if that helps, you know? So anyway, we got back in the January, at an 11-month appointment because we kept going back once a month because he was like, no, let me see you once a month just to, in case there's any changes. But when we got back after that, we'd had a great Christmas, hadn't we? So he was like, look, let's stop the lactulose then. Clearly she didn't need it the last couple of weeks. Let's just think her first birthday is in a couple of weeks and we're at the end of it. And then we went.
No.
We were at the star. So we went for her appointment. She turned one on the Sunday. We went to the hospital on the Tuesday. And I walked in and he went, oh, I really wish you hadn't come. Like, I thought we were done. I thought that was it. I thought we'd hit the nail on the head, you know? And I went, yeah, no, she hasn't pooed. And he was like, oh, okay. And he picked up the phone and he called the paediatric surgeon there and then. He said, I've got a baby I need you to see and I need you to see her now. And we saw her on the Saturday. Imagine that now on the NHS. It was about 5 days later. Right? And he said, look, I'm not going to worry you and throw things at you that you can go on Google between now and Saturday. And I went, thank you.
Yes, yes.
You said, look, we've already spoken about a few things. I couldn't remember the word Hirschwings at that point, and thank God I couldn't, right? And he said, look, we have spoke about the anteriorness. Maybe that's it. Let a surgeon see it. He's like, I'm a paediatrician, but I'm not a surgeon, right? So I'm like, okay. So on that Saturday, we saw her. She did an X, obviously examined her, and said, the same as him of like, Maybe. Because it's like borderline, you know? Because she's quite a petite child anyway. I'm 5 foot and some change. My husband's also not tall either. She was never going to be 6'2", right?
It'd be a bit odd if she was.
She's petite anyway, right? She was always going to be petite, Hirschsprungs or not. So she's like, oh, maybe it's just the way she's built. Like, maybe it's not a reason. So let's look inside. So they did an X-ray. Obviously couldn't see too much through that, but she wanted to see like her pelvic bones and see if there was anything to do with that. And she was like, look, I want to do a contrast enema. So the following Tuesday, 4 days after that, we had the contrast enema. Now, we weren't really told what that was going to entail, honestly. And when we arrived for the appointment, it was like, oh, we need to wait for the anaesthetist. And I was like, excuse you, my child's got to sleep. What? We weren't told any of this. And they were like, well, she's a 1-year-old. Is she going to sit to have a contrast enema? And I was like, well, I don't really want to go to sleep if she doesn't need to as well. Because, no, she's one. No. Can somebody talk me through it here, you know?
Yeah.
So the guy that does the enema, I don't know what the official, he's a doctor, I suppose, but I don't know what the official name is for it. He was like, look, if you want to try, we can try. It might take 15 minutes altogether. And we were like, okay. So we held her And then you can imagine what happened after the enema, right? Which, again, we were not prepared for. Luckily, I still had the X-ray apron on.
Yes, yes.
Right? You could just see the fear in this child's eyes of, like, what is going on right now? Like, things are flying out of me and I don't know how and why and I can't stop it.
Yeah.
You could sort of see afterwards that she was relieved.
Oh, I bet.
Right? I bet. Like, even though she was never a child that was irritable, you could suddenly see she was relaxed.
Mm.
Right? And it's one of those things of like, oh my God, has she felt some type of way all this time? But because she's always felt that way, she doesn't know what relaxed feels like that, you know? Had she always been in some sort of pain? We have no idea. And she's never going to tell us. She's never going to know. Right? But you could just see she was sort of relaxed. And I just remember leaving the hospital and looking at my husband. My husband looking at me like, we don't need to ever talk about this again. This happened. It is what it is. And let's go home. And we actually had a friend of ours visiting Zambia at the time. And we walked in and she just went, tea or vodka? And she could just see our faces. It was like 11 o'clock in the morning. I was like, in 5 minutes, I think, a minute. It came minutes. She's like, hey, you just let me know when you're ready. You let me know. Because she was like, I Googled contrast enema as soon as you walked out the door.
Yeah, of course she did. Everybody did. Right?
And that was that. I didn't know. I didn't. Because I was like, I don't want to. I'm scared. I don't want to. So I actually didn't. I knew something had to go into her so that they saw it on a scan, but I didn't think about it and process what something had to go into it for a scan, you know?
Yeah.
I was very naive, I think, with a lot of the things because there's nothing wrong with that. She just can't poop, you know? There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. She's fine. And then we waited. So it was about 3 weeks, I think.
Mm,
it was about 3 weeks. But in that meantime, so the surgeon, she was visiting that hospital, right? So she works out of the main government hospital, or there's two main government hospitals. She works out of one of those. And then she visits a couple of private institutions, like on the weekends and stuff, right? So she wasn't supposed to be at that hospital until like the following Saturday or something, and then she had an emergency so didn't go, and then she was on a work trip, so we probably would have had the results the 5 days later, but because it just didn't work out, it took us 3 weeks, right? And they were the longest 3 weeks, obviously. But then I also knew that maybe from that enema we still wouldn't have had the answers, so I was like, well, as long as we gotta wait, it is what it is. We just kept her on the lactulose, right? So then I'd had a message from the surgeon to say, look, I've seen them, I've got them, as in the scans. When are you available for us to meet? I'm at this hospital on this day, this hospital that day. So we actually weren't that pleased with the care at the private hospital for what we were paying insurance-wise.
Mm-hmm.
After the enema situation, there was a lot that went on that day, and like, I just didn't want to see anybody there ever again. So the fact that I could see the surgeon elsewhere, I'm like, let's go there. So we did go to a government hospital in Southern Africa, which after people are like, are you mad? And I'm like, well, it's what we've got dealt, and you go to see the surgeon rather than the facility, right? So we saw the surgeon, she brought the scans up on a computer, and she was like, look, and I'm like, at what? I have no idea what things are. So she showed us like a normal digestive system, and then her digestive system. And the sigmoid area was just huge. All I could think of it being like, you know, a long balloon, you know, like balloon animal type balloon. It was just huge. Like, it was just, her intestine was so enlarged and around, and it was wild, like scary. Like, it was huge. And then she explained to us, like, it works like a muscle. When it's worked, it gets bigger and all that sort of stuff. And we were like, okay. But then she's like, look, from what I can see from the scan, she's like, clearly there's a problem. Hmm. But I still don't know what that problem is. I know I need to go in, right? Whereas it's actually somebody I met through the Hirschsprung situation. Her daughter also had Hirschsprung's, but was more of a textbook case of didn't pass meconium. And she's actually a radiologist. So she looked at the scans afterwards and she went, oh, that baby got Hirschsprungs.
Mm.
Because she could tell the way it was and obviously her experience with her daughter and all of that as well, right? And maybe the surgeon thought it at the time, but didn't want to put it out there till she had biopsy confirmation, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So she suggested after that was, let's take her to theatre. Right. No, now I've remembered. It wasn't 3 weeks later because on the 13th of March, she had the biopsy. So it was about 10 days later. The longer wait was between the biopsy results and seeing her again.
Right. Sorry. Okay, that makes sense.
Soothed myself.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So between us seeing the surgeon on the 15th of February, she had the biopsy on the 12th of March.
Got it.
Right. So we'd already had the x-ray, the enema, and then into the biopsy.
Yes.
So the hospital that we did the biopsy from, they only do elective surgery on Mondays. So we always had to be admitted on a Sunday for the surgery to be done on a Monday. Elective ped surgery, then their time slot for the ped surgery was on a Monday. Obviously, if an emergency came in, it is what it is. Luckily for us, that never happened. And for everybody else, because there was no emergency. But yeah, so she was taken to theatre. But they were checking for the sphincter muscles to see if it was something to do with maybe like a lazy sphincter muscle that wasn't working properly all of the time. Was anything anterior, was anything out of position? And then they said, look, Mina's, we're going in, let's take a biopsy and we send it off. And we were like, okay. And her words at the time were like, to rule things out, not in, right? So I was like, best case scenario, or they come out here and tell me that she's got an anterior anus and that's just the way it is, right? And maybe they like might have to do some sort of surgery to like maybe make it wider, or I don't know, right? So that was the longest 45 minutes of our lives.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not like it is on the TV, guys. You don't get to go in and hold your child's hand and count sheep. Not at all. Right? That's not. You have to child, you hand your child over, and that's it.
Yeah. Like, right? Nothing that is terrifying. The most terrifying thing imaginable.
Balls. I absolutely bawled. And then it was like, right, calm down, calm down, calm down. You can't do anything. She's in safe hands. It is what it is. And that was that. She came out, and she was awake and was like, fine. Like, honestly, it was really okay. And when I say the child is strong, this child is strong. Right? She was okay. And we were discharged in the afternoon because she was okay. She had no fever. She had no vomiting. We were told, you know, look out for those things. But she was fine. She went home. She slept 12 hours. She was great. No problem. And that was that. You know, she was a bit sore down below. We had to make sure, you know, she wasn't bleeding or anything afterwards. She was okay. Then the way things work in Zambia is you can have things tested in the government facilities, but you may never see that again. It may take 6 to 12 months. It may take God knows how long. So we went insurance route for the biopsy. So we were given the test tube with a bit of intestine in, with a sticker around it with our name and date and what was in the bottle, and we had to take that to the lab.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? Wasn't ready for that bit either.
No, I can't imagine anyone told you that was going to happen either.
Hmm. And I remember it being like, oh, so here's the sample. And I'm like, sample of what? Excuse you? And then she's like, to go to the lab. And I'm like, oh, we got to take it. And then she's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay. And then she just went, because I was like, I ain't taking that. And he just looked at me like, I ain't either. So what's it going to do yet?
Someone's going to get it there.
Right. So the thing was, there was a nurse with us because they had to take us back down to the ward, right? So the nurse was like, took a glove out of our pocket and just put it into the glove, and we walked down the stairs. And I'm just going to my husband, what do you think we know with her? So he starts talking to the nurse, like, we weren't told anything. And they're like, no, you want to take it to the private lab, right? And like, yeah. She's like, yes, you need to take it. I'm okay. So I have a friend who works for I want to say biotech. I mean, I don't know what the right word is, but deals with like lab equipment and testing and all that sort of stuff. And she's Irish originally, but living in Zambia. Straight in the blower to her when I'm like, you've just given us a test tube with a bit of whatever in, what do I do with it? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, well, you could have told me that. She was like, well, I thought you knew. And she's like, oh.
Why would you know?
Do you want me to come and get it? And I'm like, and then my husband's like, no, we'll go and take it. It's fine. We need to do it the first time, you know, make sure everything's right. And then she was like, do you want me to meet you there? And I'm like, no, it's all right. Put your big girl panties on. We'll do it. We'll get it done, right? And even to this day, I'm still like, that's a bit weird, you know? It wasn't the first time, was it? Because there was more after this situation. But anyway, right. Continue with the story. So that was that. We were told it would take 10 to 15 working days because they actually sent the samples to India.
Okay.
Right? Everything's outsourced, sent to India. And that would have cost us, I think, about £85, pounds, British sterling.
Okay.
But my husband's government insurance, my husband works for government in Zambia. So with his health insurance, it actually covered it. The private lab was actually covered under the insurance. We never paid for anything of her surgeries.
Wow.
Everything was covered with his local insurance. Which I don't think many people realize how good that local insurance actually is. Because, you know, a lot of Africa still is very taboo with medicine and going to the doctor in general. They'll just drink a tea and be like, no, I'm right now. You know, very much witch doctor medicine and stuff is still there. You know, it is still very much a thing. But people are coming round to medicine. And anyway, so we were told 10 to 15 days. We took it on the Tuesday, took a sample on the Tuesday. We got the results the following Thursday. So it was like 9 days, not working days, 9 days general. Now, the thing was, those results were sent directly to my husband's email. So then I was there, called Google. And I was like, this child got Hirschsprung's disease. What? Sent it to the surgeon, and I was like, can you please confirm what I think these results say?
Yeah.
No response for a while, you know? She's a surgeon, clearly busy. I'm not her only patient, are we?
No.
We then have doctor friends. I'm sending it to them now. Can you interpret this? Can you interpret this? And they're like, look, we can, but we're also not a pediatric surgeon. So we don't want to tell you the wrong thing and worry you and this. And one of our very, very good friends, that we actually met in China, where me and my husband met, and very, very good friends of ours, is a doctor. And he called me and he was like, look, whatever you're reading is probably right. I'm not going to confirm or deny anything, but please just don't like freak out until you've seen the surgeon and you know what the next steps are. And I just said to him, but this isn't going to go away, is it? And he went, no, but he doesn't know enough about Hirschsprung's and everything to, like, you know, he's not a surgeon, right? Not a ped surgeon either. So he was like, this isn't going to go away. It's not something that's going to go away with medicine. Something's going to have to happen, but I don't know what, so I don't want to freak you out and I don't need to overthink. Just wait for the surgeon to respond.
Was that helpful or not helpful?
It was one of those things of, like, I know why she's not pooing now.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
But then also at the same time was like, what's going to happen now?
Yes.
What is the next step, right? So then another family friend of ours who was in the UK, who is a GP now, she sent me some literature on Hirschsprung's, which to this day is still quite useful. I got a feeling it's maybe BBC. I'll have to check the link. I'll have to find it where it is. And it's just like a 3 or 4 page leaflet, very straightforward. What's going to happen? Stoma, reversa, that type of thing, right? Very standard procedure then, right? Textbook standard procedure.
Yeah, if there is such a thing, as we said before.
I was like, okay. So had some idea. But then I was like, but she didn't stop pooing until she was 7 months. Maybe it's different. Maybe it's not going to need all of this, blah, 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 blah. So we then went to see the surgeon the first week of April. So that's when she said, look, we've had a confirmed Hirschsprung's diagnosis. That was not what we were expecting because of blah, 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 blah. But from the contrast enema, I knew it was a possibility. But we wanted to rule everything. And I'm like, okay, so where do we go from here? And she's like, look, there are different routes. There are different scenarios and in different countries. She's like, you know, you do have the UK as a possibility if you were thinking of maybe going there now for if you wanted a second opinion, you know, all of those things. And then also a lot of people go to India from Zambia and a lot of people go to South Africa because they have like better infrastructure. They have more doctors. They have more facilities and just everything in general. There's more of it. And it's more, I don't want to say proper, proper is another word, sophisticated. There we go.
Yeah.
So there are opportunities for different ways of getting things done. And she told us about frozen histology, of a way of like, you can be on the table and take out more intestine and test it there and then and do things quicker. But I think she's thinking more like super high tech. So I don't think she's ever researched the NHS at this point, you know? But she's like, that is something. She's like, I don't know if that's a possibility for you or not, but it would mean no stoma, right? Because it can be done there and then. You wouldn't need the stoma part of it. There was obviously the route of stoma, bowel resection, stoma reversal. And she was like, these are the options. This is the way I would do it. This is the way I would suggest doing it. Then she also said about the thing of 85% of Hirschsprung's cases are short segment, 15% are long. There's no way to know that until you test further in. So she was in the mind frame of why put her through all of this to remove the sigmoid side and then actually she's in the 15%. So she wanted to do further biopsy, which is why she spoke about the frozen histology part of it, because she's like, if they go in and do the further biopsies frozen histology wise, then you'd know there and then what are we taking out. You do the resection there and then. So in places like some places in India, which that radiologist friend of mine, they went to India with her daughter, and they knew she was long segment, because of the way everything was, and she had a stoma from birth to 11 months. That's when she hit 12 kilos, which was what they wanted for the surgery. Then they took her to India and they did the bowel resection and the reversal at the same time. But she only now has 8 centimeters of intestine.
Yeah, that's tricky.
So she's on the opposite end of now pulling too much.
Yeah, and
she's
just not enough stuff to.
She's similar age to my daughter. She's 2-ish. Anyway, that's somebody else's story. But we were told these options, right? And I was like, I would go to the UK or I would do it in Zambia. I don't feel comfortable going to a third country. That was just my opinion. Mm-hmm. My husband's Zambian. We've got insurance here. We've got friends who are doctors here. We've got a support system here. We go to the UK. My family's in the UK. We have a support system there. If that's what we're going to do, that's what we're going to do. Now, people assume when you get married to somebody from the UK, you can just go and live in the UK. You can't. Right?
Nope.
All the people say to me, oh, so he's got a British passport now. So I'm like, yeah, no. Not even close. So we were like, he has a 5-year visa at the minute, so can come in and out for 5 years, but can't stay for longer than 6 months. He also has a full-time job that he could have taken some leave from. And luckily they do have an option of like longer leave and unpaid leave and all that sort of stuff. And we were like, look, however long this is going to take, we need to be together for it. So are we going to go to the UK? Shall I go at first? We know what they're going to confirm. And then you come once the surgery starts. And then in my head, all of a sudden, I'm like, it's not going to be as quick as here.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home, perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah.
Not at all.
No.
Then this is when we had to like feed my parents in on it and be like, look, this is what's happened. This is everything that's going on. What's going to go from there? So my mother works for the NHS. She manages an outpatients department. So, you know, has a lot of friends within different departments because she manages their clinics and things like that. So obviously you're going to ask a friend a question of, have you ever heard of this? Have you ever heard of that? And actually the hospital she works in doesn't do pediatric surgery, like as in elective stuff. Nobody really knew a lot about it because Hirschsprung's, again, textbook, usually more younger than older, right?
Yes, yeah.
And
case though.
Yeah. And even our GP, she's only ever heard of one case of Hirschsprung's in the valleys of South Wales, you know? And there was only one in her career. And she's definitely late 40s, if not.
Wow.
And had only ever heard of one case, you know? Not familiar with it at all. So, you know, to even get a referral and all of that stuff, we knew it was going to take time. You know, my child is not unwell currently. Okay, she can't poo, but with lastive, she is going. So we never had washouts or enemas apart from that contrast enema, which again is not the usual of Hirschsprung's. So because she was going, it was like, oh, maybe she is short segment because it's not like as serious. But then with what the surgeon was telling us, it was like, look, we still need to check, but also it's the same procedure, whether it's short segment or long segment. You have the stoma, you have the resection, you have the reversal, right? So the other thing to throw into the mix at this time was we were moving to China in the August. This was April. So we were like, if we want to get it done, we've got to get done. And in my head, I'm like, it's going to be done. As I said, I'm very type A. It'll be done. It'll take this amount of weeks and it'll be done and be done and be done. And we were actually supposed to have been going to Greece for some friends. Their child was getting baptized. It was my 30th birthday. So we were going and like having a nice party and whatnot, having a couple of weeks. We were going to the UK for 10 days then, means we were on that side of the world. And then we were like, right, if we need to go to China, we definitely need to get this done now. But also, we've just been diagnosed with some sort of disease. Forget everything at this point, apart from the child, right? But then again, talking with the surgeon was like, look, she's not unwell right now, but she's not going to get better. She's not going to get better. She could stay the same for years and years and years. If you want to keep her on the laxatives, but she could get worse and she could get worse quickly. And hearing those words, it was like, and we went back and forth, we hemmed and hawed, we consulted as much as we could with friends who were doctors and midwives and medical personnel and just people we'd looked up to for advice and, you know, stuff like that. And we came round to the decision of, let's get this done. I felt very comfortable with the doctor in Zambia. She'd studied abroad. She'd had extensive training. She'd studied at the Royal College of Ireland. A very good friend of ours in Zambia, who's also a medical professional, who's Irish, did a lot of her stuff in India, then South Africa, then Zambia. She's a midwife, nurse. She was like, I know this lady. I would trust her. And after that, it was just like, you know what? Let's just do it. And then whatever follows, follows. So we said, okay, let's get it done. So she had the stoma put in on May the 13th, which again was a Monday. The Sunday was Mother's Day in Zambia. So my Mother's Day was spent in getting admitted. she had the stoma put in on the Monday and the biopsies as well. And honestly, that freaked us out a little bit more. Was seeing the scar from the biopsies rather than seeing the stoma. Because it was quite long. It was about maybe 8 centimeters or so.
Okay.
On a 13-month-old baby.
That's long.
Sorry, 15-month-old baby. It was big. It's a university teaching hospital. So, you know, there's always students around Monday to Friday, especially in the mornings when the doctors are doing their rounds at 10 o'clock. There's always students around. There's always too many students. There's the doctor plus the junior doctor, plus a nurse who's on duty, plus the parents in the room, plus the child, and another bed in the room as well, right? Luckily, a lot of the time we didn't have another patient in with us, but sometimes we did. And I remember my husband was sat in the corner of the bed holding her. She'd just fallen asleep. Doctors always come when the child has just fallen asleep. It's like, they know.
It's annoying, isn't it?
They know. This child has taken this amount of hours to settle. I have to go in and check something. Sugars, usually. Let me put that finger. Anyway. And I just remember him being like further and further up into this corner because all of these students and everything just came in and he couldn't go anywhere. And I'm just looking at him and he's looking at me and the doctor's like, okay, let me just grab her here. And she starts crying. And then I'm just like, I can't cry. And he's just in the corner like this. I'm stood now at like the foot of the bed. I can't like get to her because of all these students in the way. And obviously I don't want to be in the way of the doctor as well, because she's come to check the wound, check the stoma. This was the day after, and the stoma had become active in the night. This was another thing you were never told to me. It was like, just going to come out, right? But it took quite a time. Like, it was, she had the surgery in the morning. She came out to surgery, I want to say, around like 12, 12:30. And it didn't go active until 2 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
Very long hours. And I'd gone home to sleep because, okay, wait, we'll go back into that bit in a minute. So yeah, basically the doctors came in, he was in the corner and I was just stood there, and she removed the dressing and I just went.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.